Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levin on the Leslie Marshall Network.
Welcome to the Inside Scoop from Washington. This is Mark Levin. Welcome to my show. We are here every single from 3 o'clock to 4 o'clock Eastern Time. That's 2 o'clock Central Time, 1 o'clock Mountain, noon Pacific. I encourage everyone to listen to me live. Many of you are listening to me live right now, but if you're not and you want to hear the show live, just go to marklevintalk.com and you can click there, and that way you can call in. And at 888-653-7543, and let me know your thoughts. There's been a lot of discussion about Indiana's religious freedom restoration. In fact, a number of companies are boycotting Indiana, including Angie's List, which is based in Indiana, and has decided not to expand there. But those that support the law are saying, hey, this isn't any different from the federal Religious Freedom Restoration Act, so leave us alone. We're not doing anything. Those that condemn the annual and the law say the whole purpose of this law is to allow anti-gay discrimination, to allow businesses to refuse to serve gay and lesbian citizens who want to eat or shop or the case may be. And in fact, opponents say that's exactly what it's for. We want to allow discrimination. There's not enough bigotry in Indiana, and we want to expand it. So the real question is, what is the law here? What is the federal law? What is the Indiana law? And what's the difference between all of them? To do that, I have to, of course, give you the inside scoop. I've got to give you the backup. I've got to give you the understanding that they're not giving you in those little one-minute snippets that you see on television. So let's back up. Let's understand where all this comes from. The whole problem, like most problems in our law, began with Justice Scalia. In fact, the vast majority of really stupid decisions that are dangerous to our democracy can usually be found in some kind of opinion or another signed by or joined in by Justice Antonin Scalia. Scalia and I have very, very different views on what the role of government is. Scalia's view is that government should be able to enforce people's religion, to stuff it down your throats, to basically to force people to believe exactly what he believes, which is a certain doctrinaire brand of Catholicism. He claims this is the original intent of the founders. I have very, very different views. I believe that the intent of the founders of people's religious lives and to give them the freedom to practice their religion in any way except when it impinges on others. To make all this pretty clear and pretty simple, I think religion can be a shield and not a sword. Now, what does that mean, religion, a shield, not a sword? We all know the difference between a shield and a sword. A shield defends you. A shield protects you against others. A shield allows you to avoid others' swords. A sword, however, does damage. Sword allows you to harm others. A sword is an offensive weapon. A shield is a defensive weapon. Okay, we all know this. That's pretty easy. But in the law, there's a lot of distinction made with the exact same thing and whether it can be used as a sword or a shield. Perhaps the best example is my own hands, my fists. No one would deny that I have the right to raise my fists to block a blow. If someone's trying to hit me and I raise my fist to block the blow, no one's going to say I did anything wrong under any law. I'm using my fist as a shield to protect myself from attack. If, however, I wave my fists around and I hit you, then that's not very defensive. That's offensive. That's an assault. That's battery. And yes, I can absolutely go to jail for punching you. Can't go to jail for protecting myself from your punch. I can go to jail for punching you. I actually think religion is exactly the same way and should be the same way throughout our political system. And I also think that's the way the founders saw it. My evidence? The First Amendment to the Constitution. The First Amendment prohibits the making of any law respecting an establishment of religion. Okay? The text says Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. Now, what the heck does that mean? Congress cannot do anything that comes anything close to establishing a religion. But they can't prohibit the free exercise of religion. So the government cannot endorse, establish, promote, push, force any kind of religion on me. Government, when it comes to religion, you got to stay out of my church, stay out of my synagogue, stay out of my atheist beliefs, if those are the ones that I have. Government, leave me alone. But, and this is actually in connection with it, they cannot prohibit me from exercising my religion. I can do whatever I want. I can wear a cross. I can wear, if I'm Muslim, a hijab. I can keep kosher if I'm Jewish. I can choose only to marry a person of my faith if I'm of specific faith. If I'm an atheist, then I am free to not believe in God and not be forced in any way to deal with God, which is why I happen to believe, for example, the In God We Trust on our money is unconstitutional. Now, it's a relatively small problem. It's not like this is the biggest issue we face. Some people, when I say that, say, oh my God, you want to change our money? Well, you know, we change our coins all the time. I would remove that because our government is prohibited from making any law respecting an establishment of religion. I think In God We Trust is exactly that. I'd say take it off. So part of the issue is the government cannot establish a religion on our backs or prohibit us from practicing our religion. So what happens when it comes to private relationships? Well, the First Amendment doesn't really speak about private relationships, but it seems clear that the government can't help establish a religion. So if your local church wants to force everyone to pray at your local church, even if the majority of your town belongs to that local church and they pass a law requiring everyone to pray at your church, requiring everyone to finance your church, requiring everyone to say the mantra of your church, a minority can say, nope, I don't have to do that. The government cannot establish a religion, even if the majority feels that way. Okay, so let's bring this up to the present day. The worst case, the case that started all of this, the Scalia ruining of the law, begins with something called the peyote cases that occurred about 25 years ago. And in the peyote cases, Native American tribes have been using a drug that has some hallucinogenic effects called peyote. They've been using it for hundreds of years, probably for millennia. They've been using it since long before the United States existed, since long before the white man came to North America. This is an ancient religious practice. This isn't something new. This isn't an excuse to use drugs. This is something that Native American tribes have used, and they use it ritually. They don't just have a bunch of people smoke the drugs for fun. They use it in the context of a religious observance. So they were using in their religious observance, as they have for hundreds of years. And the United States Supreme Court, well, actually, the state of Oregon, in fact, and the use of peyote. And there was a law that would do that. And the Native Americans said that that's not fair. We have a right to use this. We have a right to use it under the free exercise clause of the Constitution. The case went all the way up to the United States Supreme Court. And the case that Justice Antonin Scalia wrote, he said, you know what? We have the right to ban the use of peyote. And he overturned a whole body of law that had existed prior. And that body of law had said that basically you have the right to practice your religion unless the government has a compelling interest to the contrary. Now, I should say to you at the outset, that's not the way I would have framed the law. I would have framed the law in a much simpler way, without a lot of that legal gobbledygook, and just said you can use religion as a shield but not a sword. In other words, you should be able to practice a religion in any way you want, as long as you're not bugging anybody, as long as you're not harming anybody else. You want to wear a religious garb, you want to eat a religious way, leave us alone, unless we're harming someone else. Religion as a shield, not a sword. In the peyote case, the Native Americans weren't harming anyone else. They weren't using peyote and then going out high and driving cars and causing accidents. They were simply using it in a religious ritual that they'd used for thousands of years. So the prior law, which said that you could use peyote or you could do religious practice unless there's a compelling government interest, worked just fine. And you could imagine what the compelling government interest is. Usually it's to avoid harming someone else. You know, smoke the drug if you want, but don't go out and drive with it. If your religion believes in eating certain dietary laws, that's fine. If your religion believes in feeding poison to children, you know what? You can't do that. That's a compelling government interest. But again, note what it prohibits. It prohibits harming somebody else. The peyote decision came, and Justice Scalia threw out long decades of prior law and said, hey, we want to say that as long as there's a neutral principle, you can overrule religion. What does that mean? Well, for example, a non-neutral principle would be the laws in Florida that banned animal sacrifice by those in a certain African religion that practiced animal sacrifice. Well, that's not fair because that's specifically directed at this particular religion. But if you have a neutral principle, don't do drugs, or a neutral principle like no one can wear a head covering, or a neutral principle like we serve on our military bases and in our prisons healthful food, then it doesn't matter, Scalia said, if that violates your religious principles. So what if you keep kosher? They're serving the same food in the prison. They weren't trying to get the Orthodox Jews. They're just serving the same food. So what if we prohibit you from wearing a cross? Our rule is no necklaces allowed. And if that's our neutral principle, that's fine. When it comes to peyote, the neutral principle was no drugs. Well, this made a lot of people in Congress pretty angry because this was an ancient religious practice, and most of Congress understood the First Amendment to protect the free exercise of religion, unless there's some compelling reason otherwise. You can think of a few, by the way. You could say, for example, that in the military, you can't wear a cross around your neck because necklaces can get trapped up in machinery, and that can cause you to get harmed while you're working a tank, just to throw out something that probably isn't true, but just to give you an example. But it has to be a compelling government interest. So the federal government passed a law that I supported at the time. It was a federal law that basically allowed for the free exercise of religion. In fact, I even confronted Justice Scalia personally on this very point. When we come back, I'll tell you my conversation with Justice Scalia on this very law, and in the latter half of the broadcast, we're going to get to how Indiana has misused this law and why we have the controversy today. This is Mark Levine. If you want to call in, it's 888-653-7543. We'll be right back right after this.
Welcome
Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Levine explaining what's going on in Indiana. And as usual, I like to give the inside scoop. I like to give the background. I like people to understand all the details. And frankly, it's an interesting story. It relates to one of my two confrontations, personal confrontations I've ever had, with Justice Antonin Scalia. They both occurred on the same day, actually, at the same time, two different things. One was the Ninth Amendment, which I've talked about at other times. And this one was on precisely this peyote case. This peyote case came when I was in law school. I was at Yale Law School, and Justice Scalia came to speak with us. And we had a rip-roaring discussion on a number of issues. And one of the questions I asked him after his speech, among a group of several people, was about this peyote case. And I said, how can it be that as long as you have a neutral principle, that you can stop someone's free exercise of religion? He said, well, that's what I held in the peyote case. I said, I know. And then I went to the heart of what I know Justice Scalia cares about. He's a very doctrinaire Catholic, and he very much supports Catholic doctrine. And I knew if I went here, he would have trouble answering the question. So I said to him, well, let's talk about the neutral principle of gender discrimination. That's certainly a neutral principle. That's not a principle designed or in any way directed at the Catholic Church. It's something that increasingly a number of people believe, that women should have all the same rights as men. Well, the Catholic Church doesn't give women the same rights as men. Women can't be priests. And that, it seems to me, if the United States were to pass a law requiring all religious organizations not to discriminate on the basis of gender, and they just made it a general law of neutral principles. No one can discriminate on the basis of gender. You could apply that to the Catholic Church, and, well, they'd have to do it. And Justice Scalia said, no, that's not true, because the Civil Rights Act of 1964 has an exemption for religious institutions. So let me back up. Again, I hope it's not too much detail here. If you have any questions, call in 888-653-7543. But in 1964, the great Civil Rights Act, which Martin Luther King and others put forward after the March in Selma, said that you cannot discriminate, that private organizations cannot discriminate on the basis of race or religion or national origin or gender. They can't discriminate. But there was an exception put in the law, and the exception was for religious institutions. Religious institutions still can discriminate, and that's why legally in the United States, the Catholic Church doesn't have to hire women priests, or you could have a religion that only gives right to men and not rights to women. So Justice Scalia pointed out quite rightly that there was an exception in the Civil Rights Act of 1964 that applies to religion. I said, that's true. But what if we repealed that exemption? What if Congress decided, in the interest of protecting all women, that we simply require all institutions, all businesses, to treat men and women equally? If we did that, then it wouldn't be against the First Amendment to the Constitution, because you said neutral principles trump religion, right? He thought a bit, and he said, I'll get back to you. I gave him my address. He never wrote back. Needless to say, Justice Scalia doesn't like his principles when they harm his church. He's more than willing to stop ancient Native American practices that have existed for thousands of years, but don't let the government regulate his particular church, because Justice Scalia is, of course, a hypocrite. Now, how do these laws come into the present time? What exactly happened in Indiana? How does it differ from the federal law? I'll explain when I come back right after this. As I was explaining, the Civil Rights Act of 1964 was really a landmark, wonderful piece of legislation. This is the one that they fought on Selma to do. This is the one that made sure that blacks didn't have to sit at segregated lunch counters or not even being served at all. And I should note that many segregationists claimed at that time that one of the reasons why they weren't serving blacks was because of their religion. They said they had a sincere religious belief that God meant the races to be separate. They, in fact, argued that the reason why blacks were from Africa and whites from Europe and Asian people from Asia was because God wanted the races to be separate. And it was just their sincere religious belief that whites and blacks should not sit together, eat together, sleep together in a hotel. Now, under the Indiana law, this is something that would be recognized. In fact, you could go back to segregation, except, of course, the Civil Rights Act is a federal law. The federal law overruns the Indiana law. But people said there was a religious reason why they should discriminate. And to be honest with you, this was something that conservatives strongly supported. They were against laws banning desegregation. William F. Buckley famously argued that people have the right to associate with whomever they want. And if I don't want to associate with someone of a different race, that's my right. Of course, that what that meant was blacks couldn't eat in restaurants or go to hotels all across the South. In any case, the Civil Rights Act prohibited private discrimination in places of business open to the public. Now, you can still discriminate in entirely private organizations. That's the reason why country clubs to this day may not allow African-American members or Jewish members. In my hometown of Nashville, Tennessee, there's a country club growing up that did not allow blacks or Jews. And it's something, obviously, that very much offended me as a kid, still offends me today. But they can do that. They can do that as a private organization. They cannot do that if they are open to the public. That's what the Federal Civil Rights Act of 1964 says. Okay, but it has this exception for religious institutions. Specifically, it allows religious institutions to discriminate if what they're doing is a religious practice. So they don't have to hire Jewish priests. That makes sense. They don't have to hire Catholic imams. That makes sense. It gets a little less certain when it comes to Catholic hospitals or other things that serve the public, but generally Catholic hospitals, for example, do serve the public. They generally don't discriminate on the basis of religion. The heart of the issue is that a for-profit institution should almost never want to discriminate. You'll never make a greater profit from discrimination. In fact, when you discriminate, you lose business, unless, I guess, the number of bigots that come in overwhelm the number of people of that minority. The heart of the difference is the Indiana law is very different from the United States law in that it doesn't apply to the government. The U.S. law basically keeps the government from interfering with your religious practice. The Indiana law says it doesn't have to be the government. It allows private people to discriminate on the basis of religion against other private people. Now, as I said, the Civil Rights Act of 1964, I think, already prohibits this unless you're a religious institution. But Indiana says you don't have to be a religious institution. You can be a for-profit institution. If McDonald's decides they don't want to serve gay people hamburgers, Indiana doesn't think McDonald's should have to serve gay people hamburgers. Now, you might say, well, that's ridiculous. How could a corporation like McDonald's possibly have a religious sensibility? That doesn't even make sense. Individuals, human beings, pray to God and have religious ideas and faith, but a corporation could have no more religious faith than a tree or a stone or a lamppost or a dog. Maybe even a dog has more religious sensibility than a corporation because a corporation doesn't exist. It's a legal fiction. It's a business entity. It is designed to make a profit. That's what corporations do. There are nonprofit corporations, and many of them include religious organizations, and sure, those have religious functions, but a for-profit business? That's ridiculous. Well, you would think so until the United States Supreme Court decision of Hobby Lobby, which was just came a few years ago, pretty recently, another Justice Scalia horrific change to our law, where he said, no. For-profit corporations can, of course, have religious sensibilities, basically saying that if it weren't for the Civil Rights Act, we could bring back Jim Crow laws, not on the basis of racism, but on the basis of sincere religious beliefs. Well, it's an awful decision. Luckily, the Civil Rights Act still prohibits it. But the question is, would the Indiana law bring it back?
I think the answer is no, actually. I think the Civil Rights Act trumps the Indiana law. But clearly this is what Indiana intended, and it's why Indiana's law is so different from the other states and the federal government that have similar laws. The phone number is 888-653-7543. James from Santa Fe, welcome to the show.
I have a rather quick comment. When I heard about this law, which was kind of a surprise to me, it made me think of two things specifically that I read about in the paper. And it was a small photography business and a small cake-making business that each refused to be the photographer at a gay wedding and be the cake maker for a gay wedding. And I believe that the gay couples ended up suing these small businesses.
They did.
And threatened to put them out of business. And I think that was probably the motivation or part of the motivation for this law was that if a person is a... I understand what you're saying about how
a business is not a private institution, but they sued to have their entire business shut down
because they refused on their religious convictions that they didn't want to make a cake for a gay wedding, and they didn't want to take photographs of a gay wedding.
James, let me ask you this. If you've got a business, and you are a Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan, and you don't want to serve blacks, okay? You hate blacks. You think blacks are inferior, and it's your sincere religious belief that blacks are not human beings and should not be able to eat at your restaurant. And the blacks come in, and they sue, and they say, either you have to serve blacks, or you can't be open to the public. Whose side would you be on? Would you be on side the Klansmen who say, we don't want to serve blacks, or the black customers who say, if you're open to the public, you should serve one and all?
I'd be on the side of the black people. Now,
okay,
you want to take it on the, if you want to flip the political polarity, imagine if a man walked into a lesbian bar and said, I want to be a bartender here, and they refused him because he's
I don't
man.
Think they can. And in fact, I'll tell you something. Gay and lesbian bars do have straight bartenders, and they cannot refuse, on the basis of sexual orientation laws, someone on the basis of their own orientation. And that's actually a fact. In fact, men walk into lesbian bars all the time. They may not be welcome there. The patrons may not want them there, but they have a right to be there, and they are.
Thank you for being consistent.
Yeah, no, but it happens to be the law, and it's something that I support it, and it does happen to be the law. The idea is if you're open to the public. Now, if it's a private club, that's different. If it's like a country club or a private society that's not open to the public, if you have to be a member to join, then you can discriminate, and that's why country clubs can discriminate today. But at the end of the day, I realize what happened in New Mexico. I think that's an extremely unusual case. I think most people don't go where they're not wanted.
I think it was a photographer. It was in New Mexico.
Yeah.
And the cake, I don't know where the cake maker was, but I remember about reading about it, and I forget where this woman, so it was some little old lady who had a photography business who was conservative Catholic, and a gay couple came to her and said, could you take pictures of our wedding? She said, and she declined, saying, I'm a Catholic, I don't believe in gay marriage. And they sued her, to the tune of like $100,000 or something like that.
And I think they actually won the suit. But at the end of the day, these are very limited circumstances. I mean, my concern is really for broad-based discrimination. My concern is a corporation. What if you went to get gas and Exxon said, sorry, we don't serve... You name it. We don't serve black people. We don't serve gay people. We don't serve women. We don't serve people whose roots are from Italy, whatever it is. The Civil Rights Act of 1964 is what prohibits that kind of discrimination. And prior to the Civil
Rights
Act of 1964, they could do that.
Who had that photography business should be – do you think she's in the same category as McDonald's?
I think that anyone who opens for business – should take pictures. She doesn't have to agree with what they've done. I mean, I don't know that if you go into a restaurant, let's say you have a sincere, very strong belief against abortion, and a lot of people do, all right? Should you be able, let's say you have a photography studio, all right, since that's your example, and you ask everyone, listen, you came in, I want to take your picture, but first I need to know if you've had an abortion. And if the person says they have, then she says, I'm sorry, I'm not going to serve you. How would you feel about that?
That's a little, I could get a little gruesome saying, I don't even want to go there.
Well, here's the thing. My point is that's a sincerely held religious belief. No question about that. But in a society that is a non... We don't have a theocracy in the United States. We have specifically a First Amendment. And so we have laws that protect us when things are open to the public. I don't doubt, by the way, that the racists of the 1960s had sincere religious beliefs. I think they were atrocious and awful. But I don't doubt their sincerity. And so...
What if you had a... let's flip it around and let's say... something that's traditionally like a left-wing or more of a left-wing belief. Let's say he had, that the photographer was an atheist.
Okay.
And like a religious group saying, I need you to take a picture of our religious gathering or our bar mitzvah or whatever it may be, our confirmation. And the atheist refused, basically saying that's against my beliefs.
Yeah, I would disagree with that atheist. Because, again, the atheist is opening their business to the public. They should serve the public. I mean, businesses should not discriminate. You could discriminate in your private sphere. The atheist doesn't have to allow the Catholic in his home if he doesn't want, doesn't have to allow the Catholic in his private club. But this person is saying, I'm a photographer. It's my job to take pictures. They might tell the Catholic Church, hey, you know, I'm not real good at churches. I haven't done a lot of them. I mainly focus on outdoor scenes. You may not want me. But if they say they want you, I agree with the Civil Rights Act of 1964. I don't think that people should discriminate because it leads to a lot of dangers. It leads, in fact, to what happened in the 1960s, where blacks could go through hundreds of miles driving in the South and not have a place to sleep at night because every single hotel would be closed. Not have a place to eat because every restaurant would be closed. And it seems to me that it's not much of a sacrifice if you're a photographer to take a picture of somebody. I don't really see the sacrifice, even if you disagree with their beliefs.
Okay. I'm glad you're consistent about it. Thank
you.
But
you disagree. You disagree. Basically, you think...
No. I'm conflicted about it. I do not have... Okay. I'm not... I can see where the McDonald's would basically, you know, a large faceless corporation should not discriminate. But it just... It's kind of one of those gray areas when an individual person has a business and they really don't want to support something... And
what if you have a grocery store? You have a little mom and
pop. Sued out of business because of that.
Well, you have a little mom and pop grocery store, and you don't want to serve people of a certain ethnicity. Should you be able to keep them out from buying gum in your store?
I see your point, and it's just that's why I think the photography case was such a example of. It's almost like, because it's not even like this person has employees. It was like, I believe it was her own business.
That's right.
And she just declined on her personal religious view.
She did. And I think that, again, if you have to make a choice, the Civil Rights Act of 1964 makes a better choice. But I appreciate your call. I appreciate you talking about it with me. Let me go to Charles in Santa Fe online, too. Hey, Charles, how are you?
Hi, how are you? Yes, I was listening about the 1964. I'm 72. I was in Los Angeles when that happened. And nothing opened my eyes more than that. Because,
you know, I think
we didn't know how much they were suffering.
I think one of the things that the Civil Rights Act does, and these laws do, is open people's minds, because a lot of times prejudice is based on ignorance. And if you never serve people that are gay, if you never serve people of a certain religion or a certain ethnicity, you might come to all these really ridiculous views about them. And maybe some prejudiced people really aren't so much evil as ignorant. And if you have to serve everyone, you might find, photographing a gay couple really isn't that different from photographing a straight couple. You know, serving blacks isn't that different from serving whites. It might open your mind. It might actually reduce prejudice. And the extent the laws do that, that's an even a better reason for those laws. But it's an important reason to understand what Indiana is all about, because Indiana's law is to promote discrimination. And when Governor Pence said, well, that isn't what this law is about, a number of people said, okay, Indiana, you want to fix your law? Just put in the law you can't discriminate against gays and lesbians. And guess what? Governor Pence refused to do that.
How would they know?
How would they know? Because there'd be a lawsuit. How would someone know they're discriminated against? Well, I don't know.
A person walks in there, and how would they know? They wouldn't know, would they, unless you went to bed with you or something like that. You know,
you could say that.
Based on a physical characteristic, a lot of men are sort of feminine.
No. Well, they might if it's two men with tuxedos that getting together and celebrating their marriage.
Yeah.
I think that's something where a photographer would know. If it's a Jewish couple and they've got underneath the wedding canopy, which is a Jewish wedding canopy, then the photographer might know. But at the end of the day, anytime you have to prove discrimination in a civil rights case, you do have to prove that's the reason. You have to say it was because of our religion or race or sexual orientation. It wasn't because, you know, we were rude to the person or the person was booked up and couldn't take us right now. So you do have to prove that in a court of law. The thing is that I think these cases are relatively rare, largely because of the success of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. It's one of the main reasons why I don't want to see the Indiana law undo that.
I think it was done purposely. And
of course it was.
Not to be paranoid or anything. The elections are coming up, and it's always been the three G's with Republicans, gays, guns, and God.
Yeah,
now,
I think
I'm
that's true. But I'll tell
you this,
I think so much pressure is being put on Indiana that I think they're going to have to roll back part of that law. And the more we talk about it, the more we put pressure on it, the more they will. So thank you for your call, Charles. I appreciate it. This is Mark Levine. When we come back, we've got the Talk Radio News Service. We'll be right back right after this. Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Levine. If you want to call in, it's 888-653-7543. We were talking just a little bit left about the Indiana law. And it should be pointed out, and you're going to hear right-wingers point this out, that there are some 20 states that have these laws, with the Religious Freedom Restoration Act laws. And again, I have no problem with the original decision of Congress to pass this law at the federal level. It protects an individual's free exercise of religion. But Indiana goes farther than the other laws. Indiana allows for-profit businesses to do this, to discriminate on the basis of religion. And Indiana also says that this can be done in private disputes. In other words, the original acts were done to prevent the government from stopping you from practicing your religion. But now it's being used to allow individuals to enforce their religious principles on those that don't share their religion. I got a problem with that. Religion and religious rights should be a shield rather than a sword. It all goes back to a basic feeling of mine about intolerance. I'm an extremely tolerant person. I tolerate everything except intolerance. I'm completely intolerant of intolerance. Now, some people think that's a contradiction. Some people think we have to tolerate intolerance. And sometimes I do. I would agree that under the First Amendment, for example, the Ku Klux Klan has a right to speak and march. We talked about that last Friday. They have that right. And I think we should go and then do counter marches that are much larger than theirs. So to some extent, I even tolerate intolerance. But that's about it, only about the First Amendment. I am perfectly fine, for example, with firing a bigot. That's right. You want to come to work for me, I will not discriminate on the basis of your race or religion or sexual orientation or national origin or disability. No, won't discriminate at all, or gender. But if you believe in discrimination, if you actively hate people of a different race or religion or national origin, then I'm going to fire you. And I have every right to fire you under the Federal Civil Rights Act of 1964, if you're a bigot. Bigots can't apply and work for me. The same, it seems to me, goes true with Indiana. If you want to practice your religion, if you want to preach whatever you want in your church, including intolerance, by the way, but I don't have to hire you. If you're a hate preacher, you preach intolerance, I don't have to hire you. Basically, you can do whatever you want with your own religious practices, but once you start forcing your religion on someone else, that to me is exactly the problem. In the Middle East,
In Afghanistan, in Iran, all over the world, people are trying to enforce religion. Shouldn't happen in the United States. This is Mark Levine. I'll see you tomorrow.